you know, when we create a huge shift in the system and release something that's been holding a lot of trauma patterns and protection patterns in place, and then that becomes released, it's almost like the whole system sometimes has to reconfigure around that huge change.
Hello, welcome back to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. Today we have Charmaine Barry. Now, Charmaine is a qualified psyche therapist with over 20 years of experience, which includes training in counseling, CBT, EMDR, internal family systems. To date, she has worked with over 1,000 people. Their healing needs have been beautifully and richly diverse in all respects, and she has been honored to witness and collaborate on so many transformational journeys. Charmaine's interest has evolved into exploration of the dualistic nature of our reality and the role of the ego within this realm. Now, this woman has packed so much knowledge about our psyche over the last 20 years, and I can't wait to find out more about her journey and the work that she does. Hi, Charmaine. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Enjoying that we had sunshine for a couple of days in Manchester, so it's been great.
So
I met you through our good friends Daniel and Christina at one of the events, and since then I became your friend. And then you were giving a talk in this festival, I can't remember the name of it, and you were talking about IFS and things like that, and I was like, I need to get this woman on my podcast because she's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so obviously our listeners don't know who you are, so could you give us a brief overview of your a bit about yourself, basically?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Charmaine Berry, and at the moment I'm working as a therapist. My background is in psychology. I did a psychology degree some time ago, and then I trained in cognitive behavioral therapy. Then I went on to train in EMDR, and that led me into different kinds of therapies, which explore the psyche. So I trained in ego state therapy, and then that led me on to internal family systems, which we'll be talking about. And more recently, I've been exploring A Course in Miracles and looking at the bigger picture in terms of the ego and the ego realm. Which has been really fascinating. So yeah, I help people on a one-to-one basis and also run workshops and some groups, and and also do some voluntary work at a project in Hume, the Naya Center. Yeah, so I keep myself busy.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, because, you know, people on personal development path, that's the we are always busy doing something. We don't have time for anything else, right? So what was your childhood like? You know, how was your upbringing?
Yeah, I think like everybody's childhoods, it kind of, there's different threads to it, and there's different levels to it and layers to it. So it depends which narrative I want to sort of thread out through that. Yeah, on the whole, it was good. I was born in the 70s and lived in quite a remote place with my parents and younger brother. We lived on a farm. So on one level, it was very free. We played out a lot in nature, and my dad was a real adventurer. And so it would take us away every summer. So we did a lot of travel around Europe. As a kid, and I went to a lovely little primary school, and it was lovely. But then there's the kind of like the trauma narrative that kind of sits within that as well, which I'm sure everybody can relate to, and that there was alcohol in the house, and also there was some abuse and difficulties at school as well. And I think because of like some of the things that were going on at home, that obviously sort of impacts on how you are just generally as a kid, So I think that reflected. I had a quite a difficult experience at school where I was hit in front of the class by one of the teachers. I think
Really?
that had a sort of an impact as well. So lots and lots and lots of things. I think I was quite a happy little kid and quite jolly and like people. I like to sing and dance and show off and just all those usual things. So yeah, just many, many layers to it.
So how was the relationship with your parents then? You said
On
there
the
was
whole, pretty
alcohol.
good. Yeah, I mean, you don't know when you're in your childhood what you don't know, so everything just seems like really normal, I suppose. And they were both quite good fun. They were very young parents, so they still wanted to have fun, I suppose. And the relationship was generally good. It got more strained with my father as I got older. He was quite strict. And again, there's a lot of kind of like normalized stuff, what we might call normalized trauma in childhood. So he's very, very strict on sort of timekeeping and what time to be in. I got grounded an awful lot. There were some tensions there, I think, because of what was happening earlier on, sort of rebelling quite a lot in teenage years. I found a lot of solace in going out as young as I could. I was sort of trying to get into nightclubs at a very young age and trying to drink and that sort of behavior. And I think that obviously really clashed with 80s style dad back then. So it got quite turbulent. So I think I left home quite early, left home at 17, which, when I look at my 17-year-old daughter now, is like, wow. seemed like such a young age, but I think I just wanted to get out of what I didn't quite understand the impact it was having on me. I think I just felt like I needed to sort of move on, which was, I think, easier to do in those days.
Yeah, like a lot of people who are in the line of psychology, not all of them, but they have some sort of trauma that they've been through from childhood or things like that, and then they go on to help other people. Did you have anything like that happen to you when you were younger?
Yeah, for sure. I think, even though, again, not realizing it at the time, under the heading of like, I want to help other people, I sort of, it wasn't until I got into my mid-20s, really. I think I'd always thought I was like really kind and sort of really helpful to people. Maybe a little bit sort of, well, not a little bit, but rescuey, and not realizing how wounded I was myself at the time. So I think I did my first sort of introduction to counseling course when I was about 23, something like that. I just felt drawn to it. I didn't really know why. And I felt really drawn to psychology. So I think also like under the disguise of helping others, subconsciously I was seeking out help for myself. But found it way too difficult to even be able to put those pieces together. I can only do that in hindsight now with the benefit of time. But also too afraid to reach out or to admit to things. There was a lot of shame around that I didn't even realize at the time. So I think I sort of got, a kind of a calling to help others, which was really the calling to help myself. So I think that happens to an awful lot, if not all, therapists and healers and helpers.
So, do you think that over the years your mental health was unstable? How did like if something's happened to you, I mean, a lot of us go through quite a lot of traumatic. It doesn't have to be a major trauma. It could be a subtle trauma, and it becomes sort of like it grows, 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 grows. Did you think that you said there was alcohol involved in your household and things like that. Did you think that sort of impacted you going out drinking? Did it impact your own mental health?
Yeah, for sure. I think like when you're experiencing adversity in your childhood, you develop coping strategies, and usually they involve just whatever was around in your childhood. So my dad certainly used alcohol a lot to cope with his trauma. So that was kind of just freely available, and it was completely normalized thing to do. So I think it just, it just seemed like a normal thing to do, was drinking from quite a young age. So always in like a sort of a social setting, there was always a reason to go out. There was always like some event or disco or something going on. We had like an under 18s club, a nightclub where I lived in Bolton. So So yeah, I think that's certainly that played a role. I think it depends on what's going on in your environment. You sort of adopt those same strategies.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, like I said, the traumatic life experiences that you go through is actually does make you stronger. And sometimes, when you know that your own parents or someone you love, you know that they have a lot of trauma, but they're using alcohol or other things, like some people turn to drugs and things like that, to shield that trauma. And it's not an easy path, obviously, but it's how it is. And
Yeah, and you don't realize that. You don't know it while you're in it because everything just seems so normal. So yeah, it's just in hindsight. And you don't know you're having traumatic experiences. You might just be feeling separate or different or a bit surreal or like you don't fit in with people or just feeling like, sort of dissociated from things a little bit without knowing that that's what it is. You're feeling quite depressed or anxious and not knowing. And I think there's a kind of a blanket of shame that goes over that stops, people from talking about it, especially back in the 70s, the 80s. These things, we're in really sort of fortunate times in the sense that we are opening up now and talking about these things and able to put those pieces together and see how that trauma has, as you say, sort of built you or informed who you are, for
Yeah,
sure.
absolutely. Going back to, when you said you were in school and one of the teachers hit you, how did you feel around that? Because it's in our law, and when I was in Pakistan, I used to have a really abusive teacher. So, she would get me in front of the class and she would ask me to read something, and if I made a mistake, she would punch me in the back, she would slap me, when you're around 5, 6 year old, you don't think anything of it until you get to a point where, oh my God, I'm having self-worth issues, I'm having this sort of issues, because it's linking back to what teacher was doing to me. So do you think that played a lot in your life?
I think so, yeah. I think especially in the backdrop of, how things were at home sometimes as well. So it was a one-off for me, and there were so many factors, so many variables around the incident that did go on to play quite a significant role, I think, later on, in that I was caught cheating. It was a test and I was having a little sneaky peek at the back of the book, forgetting that the teacher was sat right behind me.
no.
She was quite a difficult character anyway, and so I'm having a little peek just because, looking back in hindsight, I just wanted to do well. That's all. I wanted to get the best grade that I could, and I really wanted to impress this teacher that, at that point I had a lot of respect for and a lot of love for. I think I was only about 8 years old, something like that. So there I am having a little peek, and then the next minute, there's just all hell broke loose, and I was getting dragged. I got dragged off the chair and dragged into the front of the class, and it was just very shocking, just like really, really shocking. A chair was pulled out. She sat down. She put me over her knee. She lifted my skirt up. I mean, I don't know whether how this would ever be able to happen in these days. And then got really smacked, and she was shouting, "You're a cheat," and all kinds of things at me. And I was just in absolute shock. And I remember standing up. And the whole class was in shock as well and wanting to cry, but having to like push those tears down, and like these, even then, these like really strong managers being developed to protect me, in front of the class, and stopping me from feeling even more humiliated, and then sat back down again. But I've done a lot of work on it. It kept coming up in therapy over and over again over the years. Because I had issues with public speaking. If ever I stood up in front of a room full, even just more than two people, say, to speak, this horrible panic would come over me, and it had that impact for sure. Because at that time, what's happening in the traumatic memory is that the mind is taking a snapshot of all the conditions that are taking place. So, and it was creating beliefs around If you're in front of people, you get exposed, you're going to be really humiliated. It broke a lot of trust with adults and authority. It put me off school. I think my school attendance and enthusiasm and motivation after that was really, really affected. I just sort of gave up a little bit, and that kind of thing. So it had a really deep, there was many, 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 many layers to it that I didn't fully heal. I thought I'd healed it, and I realized I hadn't healed it.
Yeah, there's always a layer to all your
Layers
healing.
upon layers upon layers upon layers of it, on the cognitive, the emotional, what, how it was stored physically, all the different aspects of like trust and getting into trouble. I could never cheat again. I could, telling a lie was such a big deal. All those kinds of things. Always terrified of getting into trouble and looking over my shoulder kind of stuff. It was just really exacerbating stuff. But it wasn't until I really deeply healed this was when I forgave the teacher, and I could really look her in the eyes, in my own inner world, and really let go of that, this huge shift sort of occurred. So it helped me to understand a lot about the process of healing and trauma, to help inform me and of course people that I work with as well.
Yeah,
So
was
thank you, Mrs. Livingstone. He's probably no longer
Oh.
with us on this earth
Yeah.
plane. For helping me in that way.
Everything that you go through is shaping you into a person you're meant to become, right? So, even you're going back, you talking about public speaking, and I'm a motivational speaker, and it's like, when I first started off, it was the same case. I couldn't even stand in front of 5 people in the class, and while learning, going through the public speaking, it was being a bit of a healing journey myself. So it's not only I'm not healing other people, motivating other people, I'm motivating myself as well and healing past all the traumatic experiences. So it's always a healing journey. It's always we don't sometimes we don't recognize it, but it's a healing journey
Every day.
every day. Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously you've been through traumatic life experiences, and obviously you went way off the rails, like partying and drinking and things like that. So what was the point? What was the turning point where you blah, blah, blah. What was the point? I'm trying to get my words out here. Sorry, guys. What was the turning point that led you on a path of transformation?
Again, there's many, many layers to that, and I think what I now refer to as Holy Spirit, or the divine, or that within me was trying to help me all along the way. There was little indicators there. I kind of had a first mini spiritual awakening around the age of 21. And it was really weird. It just happened. I was working away and looking after 2 big dogs as part of the job, and I just felt this shift, like this just difference, and like this sort of sense of love. And I just really connected with these dogs that I'd never really had much time for animals in that way. But I just this kind of a shift, and that kickstarted a whole line of curiosity. I think the first book I bought was a Jonathan Cain book on tarot or magic or something. And just started reading that and exploring things, especially with my mum. We both sort of had this sort of thing at the same time, and then going to spiritualist churches and just like, what is this? And like this whole world just opened up. And I remember being in the library. There's no internet back then, just being in the library and getting book after book after book of, and anything that I could find around that. And then I sort of decided I was going to dedicate my whole life to spirituality. And then I found techno and clubs at the same time, kind of like pulled off the path again. So I had to go off and explore that, which again, I think that's certainly got spiritual tones to it as well, sort of being in that collective community as it was back in those days, early 90s really. And then I think it's just always been there in the background and never really left. And then it's been really interesting, like through the exploration and the study of psychology, how that kept sort of interweaving with spirituality as well, and just keeping me really interested in what's going on in this sort of inner realm. So yeah, and it was only perhaps maybe after doing the EMDR training about 9 years ago, I can't remember now, but that sort of, again, allowing that kind of spiritual stuff to come into the into the psychology. And then on my own journey, I had like a breakdown when I got to about 35, something like that, as well. And that really helped. Also, I had a meltdown. I had a young child. It was really busy. I had a very stressful job. I was a CBT therapist at the time. And so, yeah, whether there's one sort of defining kind of moment, I don't know. It seems to be like just be an unfolding, really, that just keeps getting deeper and deeper, especially so this year, I would say, because I've had the time, as a lot of us have, to really deepen that sort of connection, and realizing that, the spirituality is really the discovery of myself, like the real nature of who I am. And that's and again, in hindsight, looking back, I can see that that's really been, that's been the path without realizing it. It looks like you're building a career, or you're trying to make money, or you're looking after your kid, or whatever it is. But actually, it's just been there gently and whispering in the background, all the time. I also have had some experiences with plant medicine over time as well, and sort of looking at shamanism and the world of tantra, and just off on all these little journeys everywhere. And there's been big moments within those big moments as well. But
Have you
yeah.
taken ayahuasca or anything like that? Have you taken that?
I have, yes, yeah, I have
Oh, what
done.
was that experience like for you?
Yeah, really significant. I'm still contemplating it, to be honest, and still putting it into perspective because, back then doing that, I didn't have such a strong spiritual framework to sort of embed it into. So even now, I look back on some of those experiences and I'm sort of re-evaluating the messages. And the things that I was shown in those experiences. So again, it's layered. There's just so many layers. What it did do for me personally was really connect me back to the significance of, for example, the water and the earth and the planet, and sort of reawakening a deep sense of gratitude for that. It's like a reorientation, if you like, to what is the bigger picture. And kind of there's just so many different, it's hard to say. And also, kind of sense of community and the importance of connection with other people as well, and how important that is on the spiritual path. So yeah, it's yeah, there's so many different layers.
I was watching this TED talk by I don't know who it was, but he was talking about a spiritual awakening or psychosis or something like that. And he was talking about how the West and the East treat the spiritual awakening, or here it's like all sort of mental disorders, and in the East it's actually isn't a mental disorder, it's a spiritual awakening. So they kind of help you to sort of, help you navigate through your awakening, whereas here they just like give you drugs, you put you in the hospital and things like that. So it's a really, really like a really good talk that he was giving. And do you think that it's the same case here? Like there's a huge difference between the West and the East.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm really glad you mentioned this, because there is even the I don't even like to use the words mental health. I find it, not a very helpful kind of heading, really, for and all the little subtitles that are underneath that, in terms of even what we call depression, anxiety, and these kind of labels that we've all got very used to. So it's really great that you're bringing that up. So yeah, I think we do. I think mental health, as we know it, is actually the human experience. What we are actually contending with when we seem to be talking about these things are the conditions of the ego, and this kind of big belief system that's sort of stuck on us, if you like, through which we're operating, which is negatively charged, which has at its basis very negative emotions like shame and fear, and all the derivatives of that. And that's what we are really needing to understand, that is part of the human experience. And instead of trying to sort of fix it within the ego sort of conditions, if you like, and these kind of negative emotions, we need to have a bigger picture perspective, which is embracing the spiritual. And I think that's the difference between the East and the West. We do not do that here, or we haven't done until recently, which is where IFS, I think, sort of introduces itself into the Western sort of psyche as a psychotherapy that does actually do that. So it's very, very, very important. I think when we say mental health, we're kind of shrinking something down, and totally not really putting it into the wider context. So this is a really, really important conversation to have. I would get rid of the term mental health altogether, because I think the language informs a lot of the way that we conceptualize what's happening to us. So yeah, in a way that they haven't done in the East.
So, you know, you just mentioned about IFS. So can you tell us a bit more about what IFS is and what sort of work you do with your clients, and, you know, like an example of like the work that you do?
Yeah, okay, sure. So I trained in IFS around 5 years ago. I started training. So it's actually called Internal Family Systems. It was developed by a guy, is still being by a chap called Richard Schwartz over in the USA. And I was just really, really flukily, just really lucky that I got to train with Dick on three separate trainings, which was amazing. He's such a lovely guy. And it's basically tapping into ancient knowledge and tapping into what I would say is the condition and the nature of our mind. And Dick Schwartz has sort of identified that, I suppose, in a more of a Western kind of way. And its two basic premises are that essentially we all have a connection to source, which we call in this model the self energy, with a capital S, the self, who we really, really, really are. And we can take that to mean the divine or the Holy Spirit or God within us. Or whatever kind of sits most comfortably with your belief system. And that remains always and forever undamaged and is essentially who we are. What we are experiencing day to day is what we see, what we're seeing through our eyes and emotions. And we're also hearing thoughts all of the time. It never, ever stops. And when we really tune into the nature of that, it is quite negative in sort of its tone, I suppose. But what Dick Schwartz realized was that this is a whole system that others may sort of refer to as the ego as well, and that this is made up of many, many, just what he simply calls different parts, which are actually all sort of separate little kind of personalities in their own right, little autonomous beings, if you like, that are all holding their own little histories and assumptions and beliefs about things. And this is what we are actually hearing in the content of our thoughts. We're actually listening to our managers talking to what feels like to us, but actually they're kind of mainly talking amongst themselves. And sort of within the context of their experience of what is being perceived in our outside world. So they're kind of receiving that information and interpreting it from their point of view, what we might call our beliefs, and then sort of projecting that experience back out, I suppose, through our behaviours. And because this is kind of brought online, if you like, during childhood, it's kind of absorbed all those traumatic and adverse experiences that we were talking about, and has been kind of programmed, if you like, to understand that it needs to continuously protect us from those things happening to us again. So it's quite fear-based in its kind of essence, if you like, and it's quite hyper-vigilant to threat and risk, and it's constantly ready to alert us to the possibility of that, regardless to what's actually happening in the outside world. So our inner experience, if you like, which is plugged into our whole nervous system and emotional system, pretty much dictates the kind of experience that we're having as what we think as human beings, which is in fact not really us. It's not the essence of who we are. It's the kind of the energy of this system that we are being governed by in a way. It's very preemptive. It's kind of, when we're hearing that, oh, what if this happens and what if that happens, and it's kind of like going into the future, what we're hearing is our managers trying to protect us by preempting what could possibly happen in the future. It's also kind of the storehouse, if you like, for the traumatic memories, which are usually held by what we call exiled parts in that system. So yeah, it's got a beautiful combination of understanding who we truly, truly are. There's a lot of relief in that we are not this system. But it's also very noisy, and it's got our attention a lot of the time. It's our worldview, it's our opinion, it's who we think we are. It's sort of got all these different emotions and personalities within it. And it's what people tend to be, this is what we call sort of mental health, is actually the experience that we're having when we are noticing how these different parts are jumping in and out of our nervous system, depending on what it perceives to be a threat. So I help people to navigate that using this model, which is essentially what it's a navigation tool, essentially, to go into this into the system to heal it. And we do that by essentially connecting with the exiles that are holding the trauma and helping that to release. But we have to embrace the spiritual element to us, the self energy. In order to do that, we sort of bring the self energy to the parts as an essential part of the healing process. So it really demands that kind of consideration of what else, who else am I, and that connection to source. So I love
Yeah,
it.
it's a great I've only just come across it about a couple of weeks ago, and then obviously you were talking about it as well in the event, and I've had like a couple of sessions done recently as well, and it is quite intense. When you have trauma, you think you've gone past your trauma, you've healed it, like you said, and at the layers, oh my God. So recently we've been working with numbness. So what happened, what I found out is that like the reason I'm feeling numb most of the time is because I've had a traumatic life experiences, and now my parts of me are really good at shielding me from pain. So it's in after the session, does it like is it like after the sessions, when you have the sessions, you could go either way, whether you feel amazing after doing the sessions, or you can go the other way completely in a, because you're healing and you're cleansing, and you could just complete. I couldn't even get out of bed like for several days after the session, but I knew what was going on. And I'm on, a lot of us on a path of personal development, and we know the healing process. We know we're healing, we're clearing, but it's a model that isn't really recognized in the system at the moment, where because it's where they're like afraid to touch on anything going beyond the surface point, whereas we dive deeper. Do you think it will come in this in their current system, or maybe in the future, or is it, are we heading that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. IFS actually got evidence-based status in the States. I think it was in 2018 or maybe last year, which is massive. That means that people basically can claim this on their insurance and get referred. I think it's happening more in their health system in the States. And the interest in it since then has absolutely exploded. I think, yeah, what you're saying is really right. I think in terms of, in the same way that we kind of dissociate in a way and cut off the kind of deeper traumas within us, I think our whole healthcare system has done that as well, and has sort of not dared to go there yet. I think therapists find it difficult to go there in their own, most of us are unhealed, most of us are wounded in our practices, so we don't want to go there either. Plus, we haven't really had the intervention to guide us, and it's been a very, very scary world of trauma. In CBT and in my CBT training, for example, we were told not to go to trauma, don't go to the past, don't go to that scary place, keep it about the here and now, just focus on the actual thoughts. the negative thinking and change the sort of substance of that, which doesn't work. In a lot of cases, it certainly has its place, but it, essentially, it's not sort of deeper healing. So I certainly see that this is that. I think this is part of our evolution moving forward. That we want to go in there now. We've fed up with feeling terrible. We've tried taking the pills. We've sat and had the psychiatric assessments and not really got anywhere. Or we've tried to speak to a counselor and then just felt weird afterwards. And those kinds of experiences that we've tried and given up on, perhaps, think we've tried everything. When in fact we haven't, we're only just beginning, it feels like, to really, really get an angle on this, and dare to go into this sort of frontier, the final frontier, which is going into our own sort of psyches and meeting that. Some people call that sort of shadow work or facing your demons and all these kind of elaborate sort of terms that we've got, that are sort of dressing it up around that, which is really essentially just going in and looking at our own wounded children that are still existing concurrently in our experiences, that are still waiting to be healed. And now we have this amazing tool that helps us to do that. And excitingly, somebody got in touch with me last week from the UK to say that their NHS Trust had agreed to fund IFS training.
Oh, amazing.
This chap works in with complex trauma. And the therapies that we have at the moment just don't cut it with complex trauma, and can actually be quite re-traumatizing. And so that was just such great news that we can see that even in the UK, it's starting to sort of filter through. And I think, and I'm seeing it on forums as well, for example, EMDR therapists and people that are now doing the IFS training are like, wow, this is amazing, What's also brilliant about IFS is that you can blend it in with whatever approach you are using. It totally supports everything. So we've got practitioners from all the different kind of areas within the healing field, having this as a kind of a way to really expand the way that they can heal by understanding the nature of the way that this is organized, really, is extremely, extremely powerful. In terms of what you were saying as well about how does it feel afterwards, I think that really does vary from session to session and whichever sort of parts you're working with. When we create a huge shift in the system and release something that's been holding a lot of trauma patterns and protection patterns in place, and then that becomes released, it's almost like the whole system sometimes has to reconfigure around that huge change. So it can feel like that. Also sometimes, there might be parts in the system that don't agree with what's happened or were dependent on that particular substance use, for example, or whatever. So sometimes we can have a sort of a backlash around that as well. But in therapy, we always ensure, as trained therapists, that we make sure that we minimize the impact of that as much as possible, by making sure the whole system knows that it's included in the healing. So it doesn't have to try and get your attention again. And sometimes you just need to rest. You
Yes, absolutely,
take your
absolutely.
time out and recover and just,
Yeah, and I feel so amazing after that. Sometimes sessions are so amazing. I could just feel instant, like, oh, I've released something. I've healed something. But then sometimes it's like I'm completely in bed day and allow myself to cry. And that's another thing. Like you said, mentioned before, I was in and out of counseling, and they weren't barely, scratching the surface. And I was constantly told, when you're having that pain feeling, distract yourself with watching a TV or do this, that, and the other, so your pain is not there. So you're not really, they're not, they don't really tell you to heal past the trauma. The only way, for 15 years, I was in and out of counseling, never got anywhere with my trauma. And it's only until I started doing the deep inner work with the other therapists and IFS, and it's amazing. Within a couple of months to a year, I feel absolutely amazing, and I don't know why we don't have that in our system. And I'm hoping that more and more people will recognize this. And I'm hoping more and more people, just like meditation, it was like a couple of years ago, nobody really cared about meditation. Now some of the schools are bringing it in, and you know, which is so beautiful to see.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening. You know, I've met so many amazing, inspiring people just doing the IFS training and in the IFS community. There's a chap called Dr. Neil Hawkes, and he has an amazing project in values-based education. And he and his wife Jane have both trained in IFS, and they're bringing through the back door at the moment, it feels, but you know, bringing these models in, and you can really feel the force of it coming up and beyond, because we're ready. You know, I think everything happens in divine timing, and it's
Absolutely.
part of a bigger plan, and it's sort of part of our evolution, if you like, that in lots and lots of ways we've been prepared to do this. And you know, I think there's going to be many, well, I've seen this as well, many therapists, counselors, training in IFS, because it just makes sense. It just makes absolute sense that everybody who hears about it and discovers more about it, can you just it's just like light bulb moments of like you can totally relate to it. Absolutely.
Absolutely, totally agree with that. Now, you mentioned EMDR a few times. Can you explain to us what the EMDR is?
Okay, so it means eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and it's a trauma processing intervention. It's extremely interesting. Back 10 years ago, it was the only trauma intervention that was in the NHS NICE guidelines as a treatment of choice. So it was either CBT, which doesn't really have a very strong trauma-focused model, and EMDR. So basically, it was developed back in the 80s by a psychologist who sort of stumbled across, as the story goes, this idea that that we can process negative emotion and the memories associated to that through a process of bilateral stimulation, which basically means sort of stimulating the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. So primarily the technique that is used are eye movements, which therapists do either with their hand, or they have these sort of light little machines that we follow, or we can do it with auditory notes or tapping or whichever. And to put it in a nutshell, it's a lot more complicated than this.
It
We
does
found
sound
that
it.
as we focus in on a memory network, so trauma is stored on a whole memory sort of network, principally for sort of encoding five different aspects, including the sensory stuff, the images included in that, the kind of thoughts that we were having through the trauma, the beliefs that we derived from that, the way it went into the cells, like the somatic experience of that. So it's complex, there's many layers to that. So they discovered that if you sort of focused on the memory network, and especially also the negative, what they call the negative cognition, the kind of the thought and the thought narrative that you were having at the time, and keep that in your mind's eye and in your sort of somatic experience as well, and then do these eye movements or the bilateral stim, whichever way you do that, and just keep focusing on that, that eventually the memory literally kind of fades or depixelates or transforms itself. I was thinking about this yesterday because it's so interesting when they're trying to explain how EMDR works, because you know, you're just moving your eyes, and how come this massive thing happens? What the theory holds is that what we are connecting to by connecting the right brain to the left brain is what they call the adaptive information processor, which is the ability that we all have to sort of adapt this information. And I was thinking about that, and then I was wondering whether it was just a clever way and another term to use for the Holy Spirit, that we're actually joining the trauma, which we could say might be held on the left-hand side of the brain, moving that information over to the right-hand side, and then connecting these two things in order to heal. It's like bring the truth over to the trauma. I mean, that trauma doesn't exist anymore. The belief that you were having in that moment whilst it was happening to you is not true. It's not because you deserve to be shouted at, or because you are vulnerable and all these sorts of things. Actually, in our power, in our source, we're invulnerable. We deserve nothing less than love. So I often have heard, and having done EMDR over so many years, people having these realizations literally as we're starting to join these two hemispheres of like, I'm frightened, or you know, whatever it is, to my God, you know, this is just not true, or another voice coming in saying this is in the past now, you know, and this kind of reorganization of that traumatic material so that it processes, it kind of lets itself go in a way. So there's lots of discussion around EMDR and kind of its efficacy, if you like. And you know, if we don't understand the complexity of how the system organizes itself, EMDR can be less effective for some people. Although I think they are recognizing this, and there's different what they call sort of protocols within the within the treatments to address that. But basically, it's pretty mind-blowing, really.
Yeah, it
And
sounds it.
very, 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 very powerful. You know, it is something that they do suggest you only do with a therapist, because we're effectively sort of kicking doors open. It takes you on this journey of like what you need to heal next and what you need to heal next. And it'll just bring this material to the surface as you're doing these eye movements sometimes, you know. So it's very, very, very fascinating. It is a very fascinating technique.
Is this in the system, or is it coming through the back door right now as well?
In the system, this is actually in the system, and not many people know that. So if you know what you're asking for, you know, if you know your problems are trauma related, especially if it's what we might call sort of later trauma around car accidents, or what they call sort of single event traumas, that, you know, with that kind of knowledge, there are usually some EMDR trained therapists within a psychology department or within an NHS trust that you could ask them to be assessed by. They've still got quite strict criteria around it and things like that. But somebody I know has just been through that process and just kept insisting, I know what I need, I know what I need. And she did
Oh,
eventually
amazing.
get referred. It took a long time, but she did eventually get referred in for an EMDR therapist. And you know, and yeah, it is available, it's out there,
Oh wow, that's
definitely.
amazing. I think I want one now. Can I have a session with you? I
Okay,
really
if you
do.
want to try it,
Yeah. Oh no, I want to experience this. This is amazing.
it is a thing. I actually use it less. I mean, I don't, you know, I still do. I mean, it was my main, you know, sort of intervention after when I first trained it. I was like, wow, this is like incredible, because we understand, and that you know, EMDR really switched me onto this understanding that every single symptom that you are experiencing in the here and now, without doubt, is related to something that happened to you in the past. Okay, so it really helps us to sort of, you know, reinterpret what's happening. When we get triggered in the present moment, it's not necessarily about what's just happened in front of you, or what that person's just said to you, or how rude that person is, or how that person shouldn't be dropping litter on the floor, or people should be wearing masks in the, you know, in the current time, or not wearing, or whatever that trigger is. What we do is project it straight out onto the situation, when in fact, what we need to do, that trigger is, it's almost like a holy instant. It's a calling for you to go into your system and connect with this, and you will always find that's related to something that happened to you that is unprocessed. So if we can begin to shift our kind of our understanding of our experience to that, and start to really come inside and address what's happening for us in our personal emotional system, in the face of whatever we think is going on out here, then that's where the deeper healing happens, you know. And EMDR really, really helped me to understand that. They just take it for granted that that is the case, in a way that no other therapy model had ever let us think like that before. It was always about, you know, the abuse, or kind of even blaming the trauma, when actually we need to come into that and still heal that, which is incredible. I think this as well is a big part of what the true awakening is. You
Yeah,
know,
that is
it sort of,
beautiful, like really,
yeah.
really beautiful. So, me and you were having a pre-chat before, and you mentioned about DID. Now, it's a disorder that I've never heard of, and I'm sure many of our listeners haven't heard of. What is a DID?
Yeah. So that means dissociative identity disorder. It's a long title. In the older days, we would have called this multiple personality disorder. Again, disorder is like one of those words, like mental and mental health. It sort of captures more sort of understandably what the human experience is, and it kind of taps into what we're talking to before, in terms of parts, these different parts that we have in our minds. Once upon a time, we would have sort of described that as multiple personality disorder, which gives the impression that somebody can have different, absolute different personalities all existing within their beings, which isn't sort of strictly true. What it is kind of pointing to is the fact that within our ego realm, we do have all these different parts that do have different personalities. And that kind of happens on a spectrum, depending on what kind of earlier trauma you may have had. So in the face of adversity, we're kind of creating these different personalities and these different parts within us that we're all kind of used to. We all know that one minute we can be like absolutely great and fine, the next minute we're really angry, or sometimes we're like, oh, I just lost it and I became like, sort of really aggressive or really down, and we've got these different sort of like experiences that come in and out of our nervous system. But generally, we kind of have a sense of who we are, and it's kind of a bit more integrated, and we recognize and we understand that we've gone from one kind of, sort of type and part into another. With people with DID, what tends to happen is like those kind of parts become even more dissociated from each other, and can be more extreme. So in very extreme cases, it's like going into a completely separate personality type without the other personality of the parts realizing that. It's almost like a conscious awareness of the whole isn't available, so it feels very extreme and very separated with DID. I've got a little quote here about it, actually. I can read that without my
Glasses.
my yeah. So the personality of one person is comprised of many parts that are not yet functioning together in a smooth, coordinated, and flexible way. That's doing it all. And there isn't a kind of a sense of a unified person with somebody with DID, as there is with the rest of us that also have all these different parts, but we have this kind of sense of wholeness of who we are.
Do you think like a person with DID would find it really difficult to form a relationship, friendships, and things like that? Because I know a lot of disorders, it's like with body dysmorphia or things like that, there's it's harder to maintain when you're feeling low about yourself or your low self-esteem. It's harder to maintain relationships and friendships and things like that.
I think we all do to some extent. I think there's always some kind of like special need, when we're looking for relationships, and again, driven from this kind of sense of lack that is very dominant within the ego system, within the system. So maybe we do attract people for all the wrong reasons, the right reasons as well. But we know there's a lot of codependency that happens in relationships, and this expectation that somebody's going to fulfill our needs when we get with somebody. And that's tough enough, even when we have got a relatively sound sense of self-esteem and that we deserve a relationship and deserve love and those kinds of things. But when we have a very loud critic in our system, which is constantly undermining us and telling us that we're not worthy, or that you can't trust people, that you don't look good enough, that you're going to get deserted, you're going to get abandoned, this kind of narrative that we unfortunately hear, especially in what we might call at that end of the spectrum, more disordered, kind of ways of being. Of course, it's going to be difficult to have relationship. It's going to be difficult to trust other people, difficult to trust ourselves. We can also be like, when we're talking about those hypervigilant parts that are kind of preempting terrible things happening and catastrophizing and things like that, that we can live in fear whilst we're in the relationship, and all these, these fantastic things that we thought it was going to heal in us don't happen because no other person can do that for us. It is
Absolutely.
impossible. So we load this expectation onto somebody within about 2 weeks or whatever. We realize that's not going to happen, and then we blame the person, and we're either attacking them or we're super attacking ourselves for having been so stupid. Or, you know, I am sort of picking a thread here with this, but of course, you know, it is difficult to be in relationship anyway, especially with such harsh self-criticism, which we find often in these kinds of presentations around body dysmorphia and
yeah, and I think
and depression and everything.
So, you know, I think the best form of love that you could give yourself is to work on yourself, dig deeper as much as you can, like, you know, with IFS and all of the like therapies, not just the therapist that's in the system, but like, you know, like IFS is, the more you work on yourself, the more you will attract the right people, because you like you said, you end up attracting the people who are going to be your mirror. So if you having a lot of negativity around your wherever, you're going to have to keep attracting like some sort of, like, you know, a narcissist or something who's gaslighting.
We're only attracting, we use this word attract, which isn't strictly what's happening, but we are creating our reality all the time from our own systems. So we can only create the mirror of that. So we can see that two ways, as either, you know, sort of having loads of bad luck and why is it these terrible things keep happening to me, or we see it as an invitation to heal. When we can look through the projection of, you know, this narcissistic, and you see it a lot, and I see it a lot on Facebook, like, you know, this gaslighters and narcissists and these kind of words that we use, actually is just reflecting back always, 100% of the time, something that needs to heal in your mind. If you have a sense of not deserving love, that's massive, you know, and you're only going to reflect somebody who mirrors that back to you. So it's essential, you know. Don't necessarily have to join a forum which is ganging up against all narcissists and sort of trying to stop narcissism. It's just never, ever, ever going to happen unless you change. You know, some people never encounter a narcissist in their whole lives because they don't need that. And that's the word, need that mirroring back to them. So this is the calling, to sort of shift the way that we are conceptualizing stuff and always come back into the self, like you say, dig deeper, really. You know, in a really brutally honest, authentic to yourself, that is pure self-love. To try and find that self-love, we have to move those obstacles, and therefore we have to stop denying our role in what we have mirrored back in our own reality that we have created in order to heal. It's essential.
That's beautifully said. Thank you. Right. Okay. So I'm aware that you currently work in Naya Center. So can you tell? What is Naya Center?
So it's principally, it's a building in Hume that has an amazing history. We could talk about it for another hour, but I'll just skip over that. You tell of it all. It's just amazing. And it's in the heart of Hume. I feel very connected. I don't even live in Hume, but I feel connected to it. It's a radical community arts centre, principally. It's a big building which houses a theatre, this beautiful theatre. It's a little bit dilapidated, but it's just gorgeous. And it's a community of people that have come together, a collective, and with the intention of helping community and... what that means, come together in a radical and creative kind of way. So I'm more focused on helping with the well-being centre that is evolving through there, and sort of bringing these newer therapies and these newer ideas into a community such as Hume, for starters. And we've got, you know, there's a lot of ambition there about how we can incorporate the theatre into healing and these sort of different modalities through trauma and more sort of social prescription kind of ideas, singing groups, drama groups, just sort of other ways that we can come together to heal. A lot of this stuff is written about also in Bessel van der Kolk's book, as well as lots of other places as well. And just mentioning, it's a really good first protocol book, The Body Keeps the Score book. And yeah, and then you know, just sort of how does the creative arts and well-being kind of like meet? Is just an area that is really, really fascinating. So yeah, have a look. It's the Naya Moss, or you can look at Naya Moss Facebook page, and there's a website, or the Naya Center, NIA Center. Have a look at that if you want to get involved. It's a cooperative, so you can join as a member. And we're always looking for volunteers and practitioners and people that might want to come in and get help and get involved in that. So things are a little bit limited, of course, at the minute, with the situation, but we're doing a lot of stuff online. So part of that has been Naya TV, which is broadcasting out all kinds of different programs, of which I have a little show on there as well. So yeah, it's just great. It's like it's just looking at endless possibilities of like where we can go creatively and with a community-led sort of feel around healing,
That's
connection.
beautiful. Thank you for that. Now we're coming to end, but before we go, I'm gonna ask you some rapid fire questions. I'm just about to grill you with questions. Okay, are you ready? Okay, cool.
Go.
No. Well, you have to be. We're not gonna end this interview without rapid fire questions. Right, okay. So what is your definition of God?
All that is, it's everything, and it's the source from which everything was created.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. How do you define religion and spirituality?
Religion is perhaps where the ego of the mind has overcomplicated and doctrinated simple truth and put around it and set it into a whole set of rules and regulations, perhaps for whatever kind of reason, that yeah, that's all I want to say about that.
Okay, so what's the lesson that took you longest to learn?
Oh, yeah, that's easy actually. Forgiveness is everything.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. I'm actually working on that every day now. Do a forgiveness prayer.
Big one, whole other series on it. It's amazing. But I just, you know, I just suggest to people that if it's not something you haven't explored, it isn't what you think it is. It's actually quantum technology. And, you know, I've just discovered the work of a chap called, which I remember his name, I think he's called Mike Rice, RYCE, who just talks about this so amazingly. Go and have a look. If you want to fast track your healing, go there.
Ho'oponopono is another great one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It ties into that. It's technology. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Okay, so do you believe there is an end to healing?
I think that we will get to a point in our evolution where we transcend this realm of suffering. We realize then that we don't need to heal. We are healed, but not in this level of consciousness that we are currently experiencing.
Beautifully said. Okay, one more. The world needs more of what?
Love and forgiveness.
Yes. A bit of a Ho'oponopono. Amazing. So one last question, actually two more before we get on to how people can contact you. What is that one message that you would like to share with someone who's going through adversity right now, who's going through darkness right now? What would you tell them?
So if that's what you're feeling right now, just very quickly, just invite you to put your hand on your heart. And with your eyes closed, you can just repeat a soft, gentle mantra to yourself that I am willing to do what it takes to heal through this. And I am asking for the help that I need in order for that to happen. And just even if you say that with slight little bit, even just a little bit of belief that that can happen, that's going to be enough. And really start to call that in and open yourself up to it and open yourself up to the belief that there is nothing that cannot be healed and that you do deserve it. and it is there for you. And this could just be the start to just ask the world, ask the cosmos, ask God, ask your higher self, ask the angels, ask the earth. It doesn't matter. Just put in that call out to bring that healing into your field as a starting point.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will relate to what you said. And, you know, I wish them all the best. Okay, so how can people contact you?
So I have a website. It's www.charmaineberry.co.uk. Mm-hmm. You can contact me through there. My email address is on there. You can contact me through Facebook. I do use Facebook quite a lot. So either send me a message through there or friend me on there. It's just Charmaine Berry. Mm-hmm. How else? I think that's all the mediums, really. You can, if you do follow me on Facebook, I post workshops that I'm doing on there. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for therapy, I'm generally usually full in terms of my caseload, as it were. But please do get in touch. I might be able to signpost you or point in the right direction, or there may be a space coming up at some point. So do that. I offer consultations as well as therapy sessions. So I think that's just the best way to sort of track what I'm doing to sort of get involved. I do have a Facebook group called Internal Family Systems in Manchester. Mm-hmm. So this was created because we used to have physical meetups every month going back 2 or 3 years now. So they stopped with COVID, and I have got an intention to do an online one at some point as well. But yeah, just maybe just join that group as well, and yeah, just get in touch.
Okay, amazing. So yeah, thank you so much, Charmaine, for coming on this podcast, and I've learned so much from this interview, the internal family systems and EMDR and DIZ. There's so many things. I'm sure lots of our listeners will gain some knowledge from it as well. So thank you so much. Is there anything, is there any last message that you would like to say?
Yeah, just don't give up and find that help. And it might mean that you have to go through many, many different stages to do that. But understand that everything is a stepping stone and absolutely nothing goes to waste whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just keep persevering and keep asking and find that way through, and it'll be worth it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Charmaine.
Thank you so much. Take care, then.
Thank you so much for listening to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. I would love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. Share your thoughts on my Facebook and Instagram, Madhya Sosan. You can also check out my website, madhyasosan.com. If you would like to watch this episode, then head over to my YouTube channel, Mads Corner, M-A-D-Z Corner. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do rate and share this with your family and friends. Thank you once again, and I will see you on the next episode.